The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Bahati Mutisia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazine. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Teen Vogue and Teen Inc. Since we're still in January, the first article from Teen Vogue's OG History series is titled, Watch Nights Reflect The History of New Year's for Black Americans. This is by Jamila Nasheed, and this was published December 31st, 2020, New Year's Eve. We often think of New Year's as a moment to reflect on the year that was and consider what the coming year will bring. But for Black Americans, this time of year was once fraught with uncertainty and anxiety. During the days of U.S. slavery, January 1 was known as Hiring Day, or Heartbreak Day, a day when business owners would collect and settle the bulk of their debts through the sale of black bodies and black labor. As a result, enslaved black people would spend New Year's Eve waiting to find out if they or their family members would be rented out or put up for auction on New Year's Day. Of all the days in the year, the slaves dread New Year's Day the worst of any. Lewis Clark, who had been born into slavery, escaped, and later became an abolitionist speaker, said in 1842, "For folks come for their debts then, and if anybody is going to sell a slave, that's the time they do it. And if anybody is going to give away a slave, that's the time they do it. And the slave never knows where he'll be sent to. O New Year's, a heartbreaking time in Kentucky." Then, on December 31st, 1862, the significance of the holiday dramatically changed for the United States black population. One of the most notable New Year's Eves in U.S. history, also referred to as Freedom's Eve, marked the brink of the first major step in the path to freedom for black Americans. On that New Year's Day, January 1, 1863, President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. While this pivotal document was intended to preserve the Union rather than act as a means of liberation, it effectively freed enslaved black people in the Confederate states that had seceded from the Union. Slavery wasn't fully abolished until the end of the Civil War in April 1865. With the last enslaved people learning of their freedom on June 19th of that year, known as Juneteenth. And it wasn't officially outlawed until the December 1865 ratification of the 13th Amendment. Still, the course of Black American history changed forever on that New Year's Day. In anticipation of that historical moment, Black people gathered in homes and churches on Freedom's Eve, waiting for confirmation that the Emancipation Proclamation had officially been issued. They were watching out for notification by newspaper, telegraph, or word of mouth on what is now referred to as the First Watch Night. American abolitionist Frederick Douglass is said to have described the moment he heard news of the proclamation like so. The scene was wild and grand. Joy and gladness exhausted all forms of expression, from shouts of praise to joys and tears. In the years since, watch night services honoring the Freedom's Eve have been held at black churches nationwide. Watch Night isn't the only present-day New Year's tradition with a Black history origin story. There's also the traditional Southern meal of black-eyed peas and collard greens for good luck and prosperity. Some people say the greens represent cash, while the peas represent coins. Although it's oftentimes referred to as an American South tradition, these foods are distinctly black. Collard greens were one of the few crops that enslaved black people were permitted to grow for themselves, and black-eyed peas, brought to the United States during the transatlantic slave trade, were eaten by enslaved Africans before making their way to the tables of their masters. For generations, black people in America have been eating some variation of black-eyed peas and collard greens on the first day of the year. This tradition, like so many others, is a reminder of one of the longest and truest traditions of black Americans, having an unrelenting sense of hope. From Heartbreak Day to Watch Night on Freedom's Eve, I can't help but think of the uncertainty that generations of black folks faced on a daily basis, but especially on those particular days. I think about how, through it all, they held on. They made the generations of black Americans living freely, well, as free as we've ever been, in this country today. In this era of pandemic and climate crisis, of racial injustice and crushing poverty, it can feel like we have so little control over our lives and so little ability to plan ahead. But as we venture into another year of unknowns, I'm remembering that history has shown us that having hope is what will get us through. And now, a very touching piece from an anonymous writer from Teen Inc. This is titled, It Just Happened, and this was published back in August 21st, 2009. The date was April 2nd. April 2nd was the day her life changed. April 2nd was the day my life changed. She found out she had acute lymphoblastic leukemia. The first day of my junior year of high school, I had AP chemistry, first and second period. All I could think when I walked into the lab was, how am I going to stay awake? I saw the teacher standing by the door and walked over to her. Name? She asked with an annoyed tone. James, I said. James, do you have a last name? Bond. I'm not kidding. Give me your last name. I'm not kidding. My name is James Bond, and it should be the second or third from the top. It took her a moment to check the list off and check my name. She then told me, see the girl in the blonde hair? That's your lab partner for the rest of the year. No substitutions or swaps. All righty, I said, and sulked off to meet my lab partner for the rest of the year. No substitutions or swaps. I sat down next to my new lab partner. Hi, I guess you're my lab partner for the rest of the year. No substitutions or swaps, she said with a smile. Hi, my name's James. James Bond. Your name is James Bond? She asked with disbelief. Yes, my parents are huge James Bond fans, and my father's surname just so happened to be Bond. They were enthralled when they found out they were going to have a baby boy. She smiled and laughed. Well, my name's Emma Craig. I moved here from Bath, England a few years ago. I came from a public school in Bath, and I have no clue if I'm going to be able to keep up. Well, Emma, if you ever need help, you know where to find me. We both smiled and began to listen to the lecture. When Mrs. Bingham finally let us loose with the Bunsen burners and extremely dangerous chemicals, it was chaos. The table next to us managed to melt the glass beaker, spilling all of the contents onto the table, leaving a small cat-sized hole in the lab table. The table behind us exploded the contents of their beaker everywhere, burning multiple innocent bystanders. And we weren't doing too well ourselves. Emma had beautiful, long, blonde hair, and she forgot to tie it back before we started. About 5 minutes into our experiment, I looked over and her hair was sizzling and smoking. The smell of her burning hair was overwhelming. Emma, I said. What? She cried. We were both becoming flustered with the assignment. Emma! What, James? Your hair. My hair? Oh, God! She sprayed her hair down with the water that was sitting on our lab table for events such as this. Miss Craig, I see that you did not follow one of my rules. Do you know what the penalty is for not following my rules? Yes, Mrs. Bingham, Emma said. People all around Emma and I began to snicker. And what would that be? She asked Emma, a cruel smile beginning to form on her face. I am banned from the lab for the rest of the semester. I couldn't let Emma fail. Mrs. Bingham, I distracted Emma, and she forgot to pull her hair back. All right, Mr. Bond. Detention for a month. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. I'll be seeing you after school today to start your detentions. Yes, Mrs. Bingham. Oh, Emma, next time I will kick you out of my class. She chastised Emma and returned to the front of the room. When Mrs. Bingham's back was turned, Emma whispered to me, You didn't need to do that. It was all my fault. I'm lucky I didn't lose all of my hair. It's actually a good thing that this happened. I've been meaning to get my hair cut short for a long time. This was the extra push I needed, she told me in a rush of words. I had a hard time following her. Well, if it counts, I like your hair long. I hoped I hadn't freaked her out. I'd only known her for an hour and a half, and I was already giving her creepy compliments. Thanks. I'll take that into consideration. She smiled and returned to her lab report. The bell rang a half an hour later, and we packed up. I walked her to her locker. I watched her try to pull her books off the top shelf of her locker. She was up on her tippy toes. I reached up to help her, and everything on the top shelf fell to the floor. I quickly stooped to the ground and started to collect her things. Calm down. I'm perfectly able-bodied and capable of picking up my own books, she laughed, and took her pink notebook from me. She came a step closer, her hair brushed against my cheek, and she whispered in my ear, Thank you, and hurried off to her next class. I was stunned and shocked. My heart pounded, my palms began to sweat, and the bell rang. I was late for the third period of my junior year. I couldn't believe that I could have so much homework the first day of school. It was crazy. I slowly walked back to my locker and dumped what I needed to bring home into my backpack. There was no need to hurry. I wasn't going anywhere anytime soon. I could sense that somebody was behind me. I turned around to see Emma's beautiful smile and golden hair. I just wanted to thank you again for covering for me in chem class today. Before you go report to detention, I owe you big time. She smiled, kissed me on my cheek, and went to her locker to get ready to go home. I was beginning to wonder if Emma had this effect on all guys, or if it was just me. The next morning, I couldn't get to chem class quick enough. Emma walked in 10 minutes later with her hair pulled back into a low ponytail with a ribbon. It was almost like she was mocking Mrs. Bingham. She sat down next to me, my non-substitutable or swappable lab partner. I could never imagine substituting or swapping Emma for any other partner. I hope she felt the same way. I see you remembered to tie your hair back, I said, half laughing. Yes, I did, she smiled. Your hair looks nice today, I told her. Thank you, James, she said to me and began to work on our newest lab assignment. 3 broken beakers, and 2 hours later, we had successfully completed the experiment and lab papers. Mrs. Bingham came around to our table and looked impressed. She passed by without saying a word. Emma and I high-fived when she was over critiquing some other kid's experiment. This little ritual of chem class went on for months. After I finished my detentions, I'd go over to her house and we would study. Her mom would make dinner and asked the both of us how our days went. It was the same old answer every day. One day, Emma was showing me this amazing pianist on YouTube, and we eventually ended up on his MySpace. We scrolled down through his comments and saw this Chris Townsend kid. Emma clicked on his name, and it brought us to his page. The first song on his playlist off of his CD was Stay Positive. We listened to it for a bit. The song was amazing and beautiful. Emma turned to me and said that this would be our song. She also told me that every time we heard this song, we would think of each other. How could I disagree with her? The last week of Christmas vacation, I finally worked up enough courage to formally ask Emma out. We had gone to many movies and the Christmas dance together, just as very good friends. We weren't officially going out yet. We were sitting in her room reviewing for our midterms. Emma? I called over to her. Yes, James? I was wondering if you would like to go ice skating with me tonight. Like a date? She asked, turning around in her desk chair to face me. Yes. I'd love to. She smiled and came over to me and kissed me on the lips. There was an outdoor ice rink set up for the weekend at the museum in our town. I decided to take Emma there. Later that day, I picked Emma up at her house. She came down the stairs in an adorable blue jacket and white knit scarf, hat and gloves combo. We had a great time. April 1st came and went without a glitch. The next day, I got to chem, and Emma wasn't in her seat. I worried the entire class and the entire day. After school, I stopped by her house and rang the bell. Emma answered the door and told me to come in. She took me up to her room and told me to sit down. I did what she said. She did not look like she wanted to be disobeyed. James, I went to the doctor today, she told me, sitting down next to me. And? I asked, trying to prompt her. They found something strange in my blood work. Something not good. They say that I have acute lymphoblastic leukemia. They need to do more blood work, but I cut her off. You have cancer? I asked. Emma began to cry. Yes, I have cancer, she said matter-of-factly. You have cancer, I said again. Yes, James, I have cancer. There's nothing I can do about it but accept the fact that I have cancer and start an extremely aggressive chemo regimen and hope it works. Are you going to lose your hair? I asked. Yeah, I guess I'm going to get that short haircut that I've always been wanting. She laughed. Are you going to live? They say I will, since I caught it so soon. There's an 85% survival rate. There's still 15%. I know. I'm going to kick that 15% in the butt and make it wish it never thought of saying I was going to die. Are you afraid? I'm very afraid. Are you afraid? I think I'm even more afraid than you. In the background, I could hear our song playing, Stay Positive by Chris Townsend. At the same exact moment, we looked at each other and said, Stay Positive. That was the last time I saw Emma cry. As the days rolled along, Emma's hair began to fall out. It started in small patches that she could easily hide by combing her hair differently. Eventually, the bald patches came to be too noticeable, and she got her head shaved. One day after school, Emma asked me to let her drive home. I had picked her up that morning and was going to drive her home so we could study, but I was too smart to disagree. She had this determined look on her face, and I wasn't going to stop that. We pulled up at the local barbershop, and she said, I'm tired of my hair. I'm getting it shaved off, and you're going to stand there and help me get through it. We walked into the barbershop, and she told the man at the front desk, I have cancer, and my chemo is making me go bald. I want you to shave my head." The man at the front desk looked at her in utter disbelief. She was a paying customer, and he couldn't argue. We walked over to one of the chairs. He turned the electric razor on and began to shave off what was left of Emma's golden locks. When the man was done, she looked at herself in the mirror, handed the man a 20, and walked out of the shop. I caught up with her at the car. "Do you want me to drive you home?" I asked. "I think that would be a good idea." We spent the car ride to her house in silence. When we got back to her house, she walked inside, and her mother took one look at Emma's nearly bald head and hugged her. Her mother did not cry. She only held on to Emma for so long as she possibly could before Emma broke away. Emma's mother kissed her on the head and went back into the kitchen. The next day, when Emma and I walked into school, jaws dropped. People finally realized what was going on with Emma Craig. They did not fully understand, but they had a better idea now that Emma didn't have hair anymore. We walked into chem, and Emma walked over to Mrs. Bingham and just stared at her. Mrs. Bingham's jaw dropped, and she never gave Emma any more problems. Mrs. Bingham just looked at Emma with this pathetic look of sympathy, and Emma hated that even more than her constant grief. May came around, and prom fever was in the air. Everybody was buzzing. I decided to ask Emma to prom. I walked up to Emma's locker at the end of the day, as usual, and pulled a single daffodil out of my backpack and asked her to prom. She smiled and kindly accepted the flower and my invitation. May 7th came rolling around sooner than the both of us could imagine. I picked her up at her house. I watched her come down the stairs in a beautiful cornflower blue silk gown. We stood in front of the mantel in her living room for a quick photo op, and then we were off to prom. We danced, we talked to our friends, we ate, and we had a good time. The last song of the night was our song. We looked at each other and I held her in my arms. I whispered in her ear, like she did to me so many days ago, but the words were different. "I love you," I told her. She looked up at me and said, "I love you too," and rested her head back on my chest. That summer, her cancer took a turn for the worse. The doctors could not seem to get her into remission. She lay feebly in her hospital bed, covered up to her neck in blankets. She was a feeble and tired version of the Emma I met so many months ago. It was August 2nd. I had just come back from eating in the cafeteria at the hospital. I sat down on her bed and kissed her head. She looked up at me and smiled. Her smile was beautiful. She whispered to me, "I love you." The monitors went dead. She was gone. And the final piece today is back from Teen Vogue, the 15 best meditation apps according to people who actually meditate. Learn how to take a moment. This is by Anna Borges, and this was published January 6th, 2021. If you want to start meditating, you're in the right place. Some of the best meditation apps out there are designed specifically to show beginners the ropes and stick with them as they graduate into more advanced meditators. Experts often recommend apps for beginners who have no idea where to start with meditation because they provide guided instruction to show you exactly what to do and help you stay accountable. But it's not just the experts who love them. The apps on this list have devoted user bases who swear by them too. Below, find some of the best meditation apps out there, including both free options and subscription-based models that many people think are totally worth the price. Remember, like all things mental health, it might take a bit of trial and error to figure out what works for you. So don't be afraid to try a few apps to see which one is most your style. And don't worry, many of them have free trials for precisely that reason. Alrighty, ready to start reaping the benefits of meditation? Let's talk apps. Number one, Insight Timer. It's not an exaggeration to say that Insight Timer is beloved by its users, many of whom think it's way underrated compared to the Headspace and the Calm of the meditation world. But with over 260,000 reviews and a 4.9 average rating in the Apple App Store, it's gone pretty mainstream and is a top pick for meditation beginners and enthusiasts alike. And it's not difficult to see why. While other leading meditation apps can get pretty pricey, Insight Timer stands out for its expansive free library. Not free as in try your first three meditations free when you have to sign up for a premium either. We're talking 70,000 free meditations and music tracks with new content every day. For beginners, Insight Timer has a 7-day free course that will teach you everything you need to know about how to meditate. You can also track your meditation practice and milestones with free charts that sync up to your other devices. Upgrading to Members Plus unlocks more premium features, such as advanced courses, offline listening, and upgraded audio player. But quite frankly, many, many Insight Timer users report that the free version is more than enough. And just to truncate the article, because we're running out of time, I'll just read the names of the other apps that are included in this article. Number two is Headspace. Number three is Shine. Number four is 10% Happier. Number five is Calm. Number six is My Life Meditation. Number seven, Healthy Minds Program. Number eight, Aura. Number nine, Expectful. Number 10, The Tapping Solution. Number 11, Honest Meditation, and that's spelled H and then the asterisk and then N-E-S-T Meditation. Soulmate, spelled S-O-W-L Mate. Smiling Mind. Balance. And then finally, Oak. Okay, we have run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bahati Mutisia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.